From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll find out how Comedy Sports is celebrating its 20th anniversary season.
I'll get a preview from Shannon Forsell of upcoming shows at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club.
Then I'll learn about the Three Faith Traditions art exhibit at the JCC, and we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Quick, make it funny, frisky, and family-friendly, and make it up on the spot. That could be the job description for the act-elites of Comedy Sports. The Indianapolis Comedy Sports franchise is celebrating its 20th year in Indianapolis, and Sharon Gamble invited Ed Trout and Michael Davis into our studios to learn about how they manufacture a fresh show over and over, and whether it's difficult to say goodbye to a beloved character.
And I'm going to start with you. Tell us about Comedy Sports, big picture stuff. Where did it start? What is it?
Big picture Comedy Sports. Comedy Sports is improvisational comedy played as a sport, and it is intended for all ages. So it's a clean show. There's a referee that moderates and helps keep it clean and keep it moving. Comedy Sports nationwide, or I should say worldwide at this point, started back in 1984 in Milwaukee. A man named Dick Chudnow took some of the principles of theater sports and altered them to make a new format that was a lot more sustainable, a lot more surefire, a lot more audience friendly. And it just took off from there. And now it's all over the country and even overseas in Manchester, England, and Berlin, Germany.
Yeah, there's a couple dozen cities where you can play.
Yes, they dot all over the major cities of this country.
And your first experience with Comedy Sports?
My first experience with Comedy Sports was seeing it in Chicago, and that was back in probably 91 or 92. We started doing Comedy Sports here back in 1993. At the time that I had seen Comedy Sports in Chicago, I was a member of an old sketch comedy and improv troupe called Below the Belt. So the group of Below the Belt had made a trip to Chicago, and we went and saw that show, and we were convinced that that format, again, was so translatable to all audiences, and that it was just something that was fun to perform and fun to watch, and we wanted to try it here.
Mm-hmm. And it, obviously, you took the risk, and 20 years later, you know that it was the right thing to do.
Yes, indeed.
Were there some scary times early on when you had to figure out how to explain to people what this was and that it truly was family friendly?
Yeah, before the advent of Whose Line Is It Anyway, we didn't have a lot of touchstones for people here in Indianapolis. So you would say, oh, we do improvisational comedy. And they're like, oh, stand up, like at the improv. Say, no, it's not stand up. It's not rehearsed material. It's a whole group of people making things up on the spot. And then when you say, and it's a clean show, they would go, well, clean comedy. You can't do that. And especially if you're making things up, they assume that you have to go into something, you know, dirty, blue humor. And it's like, no, we really do keep it clean. It's intended for everybody.
Michael, what was your first exposure to Comedy Sports?
I started attending Comedy Sports matches 10 years ago, right after the 10th anniversary. And I was coerced into taking a couple of workshops.
Now, wait a minute.
And so I did it. 10 years later, I'm still here doing improv, and it's a lot of fun.
So I want to ask each of you, what was your, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, did you come up through more traditional acting training and experience?
Yeah, I came up through a general arts background. So if you go way back to college, my actual degree is in visual arts. But
what?
I always had my hand in performing arts, even as a kid, all the way up. So traditional theater, scripted theater was my performance background up until we started experimenting with improvisation. So we used improvisation to create sketches for Below the Belt and just built from there, and then started doing the improv itself as performance for the audience. So, yeah, it came about through more traditional scripted theater, and that was how I met the group of people with whom I helped found the group.
And, Michael, your background before being coerced into, held tied to a chair, forced to take workshops?
Theater, yeah. I came with a more traditional theater background. Went to Ball State for theater and musical theater specifically, and then started doing the improv, which I think has helped me as an actor for the scripted stuff.
Sure.
It helped because it gets rid of that fear of what happens if somebody forgets their line on stage.
Right.
Or what happens if I forget my line on stage. That doesn't bother me anymore because I know that I can handle it and just go with it, because the improv training has helped with that. Also with character development as well.
So in a way, they're two completely different skill sets, though.
There's some basic skill set that crosses over, things to do with performance energy, basic
stagecraft. Here's the light, stand in it.
Exactly.
That's silly.
Exactly. So, you know, a use of body and a lot of that. Uh-huh. A lot of that crosses over. But as far as the mental approach, it is very different, because one is about seeking and finding things that are already within text that you're studying and trying to memorize. The other is the whole shebang. You're making all of your choices about who this character is, what their background is, what your story is, where you want it to go, and then reacting to where the other players want it to go so that you can find that middle ground where everybody's ideas work together. So it's a different approach, but so much fun.
Which one requires more trust, straight theater, traditional theater, or improv?
I think improv. There are all kinds of trust exercises that people do with traditional theater and with improv.
Sure.
But if I had my choice of I'm going to do a trust fall from a 10-foot balcony or whatever into a group of people that I know are going to have my back, I would choose a group of improvisers over a group of regular actors. Nothing against regular actors, you know.
Yeah, we're not trying to start
a war
here.
But I'm just
or
saying.
Or maybe we are.
No. There's way too much crossover between the groups.
Yeah, right.
but improvisers, there's just something that clicks. We know it's about the team. We know we're there to have each other's back. And not to say that you never have personality conflicts or different views within that. But when somebody's going to fall back and they need somebody to catch them, you jump in.
Right, you're there.
Yeah.
How much of the ability to improvise is craft and how much is chromosomes? What do you think?
I think, honestly, it's about 70-30, 70 craft, 30 chromosomes. I think most people can learn to do it. Some have a much more natural inclination to do it. And there are a very, very small number that just can't get it. Some get it. They may not ever be ones that you're going to want to, you know, go see do this professionally, but they understand the concepts and they can make it work. Some people just naturally, it comes out of their mouth, it's in their body, it's in their mind, and it's the way they live.
What do you think?
I would have to agree with that. There are several people, Claire Wilcher, one of our performers, it just seems to be in her blood.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been doing comedy sports for 9 years, and she just had that natural ability to begin with, and she just continues to grow and become stronger and stronger and stronger because she's developed the skill that she already had naturally. And then there's other people that the skill comes first, and then once they realize they have the skill, they're able to tap into that natural ability that they had to begin with that they didn't realize that they had.
I want to talk about the corporate side of your business in a minute. But for listeners who might not have had the pleasure of coming to one of your shows, walk us through it. What happens?
Sure thing. At the top of the show, or the match, it is a match.
Right,
they are
right.
Sporting events.
Right.
So we bring out two competing teams, one in red, one in blue, and there's a referee who then moderates. And the referee really at the beginning explains to an audience what's going on, because there are newcomers almost every performance, and we want to make sure that they get it, that they know our approach. We'll be getting suggestions from them. There are fouls. It's a sport. So the two major fouls that we explain right up front are the groaner foul for bad puns, things that make the audience groan. If that happens, the player will have to apologize to the audience afterwards. If the audience accepts that apology, no harm, no foul. If the audience rejects the apology, that team loses points.
Mm-hmm.
So there are stakes there. The second and probably our most important foul is the brown bag foul.
Notice I'm passing up the opportunity to make the obvious pun about steaks.
Right.
Aren't you proud of me?
Thank you, because then we would have to groan.
I know. I'd have to apologize. Sorry.
That's okay. But the brown bag foul is the one that really helps control content. So it's the one where if somebody says or does something that is inappropriate for an all-ages performance, they get a brown paper bag put over their head. They have to wear it for the rest of that game, and they would lose points from their team score automatically. That is a foul that also applies to the audience. So any audience member who gives suggestions that are too far outside of a family-friendly nature will get a brown paper bag over their head, and they will have to wear it for the rest of that game. Other than that, we play through different rounds, and every round there are points awarded. Some rounds are elimination rounds. Some rounds are voted on by judges in the audience. By the end of the match, one team has more points than the other, and they get the meaningless trophy at the end of the match.
So, obviously, these are rules governed by the parent organization, Comedy Sports, and the agreed upon etiquette as well as rules.
Right.
Is there a style to each city? If we popped into Buffalo and went to Comedy Sports in Buffalo or Chicago, would it be? Would we know that we weren't in Indianapolis, or maybe flipping that, how do we know we're in Indianapolis?
Right. Very often you do see stylistic differences. Sometimes they're very recognizable stylistic differences. Sometimes they're a lot more subtle. But absolutely, when you go from city to city, you see different flavors, different approaches. Chicago, being Chicago and that seat of improv, Chicago has a very, what feels like an aggressive style. It's great. It's high energy, but it's very in your face. A lot of other cities play a little more gently, if you want to put it that way. Los Angeles, obviously with lots of local professional actors and so forth, relies heavily on music, and you see a lot more intricate character work from them. So it just varies city to city. And yeah, each one is a different flavor. So I recommend visiting each one and just seeing how they vary.
Sure.
But the show format, the basic concept, the precept of the show is always going to be the same.
So there's a natural extension from what you do on stage to corporate training, and you do all kinds of work with companies of all sizes. What's your favorite kind of work to do with a company?
That's a good question. There's all kinds of things that I love doing, but probably just a basic approach to team building using improvisational skills. Because the fundamentals that we apply as improvisers, as you mentioned, are kind of a natural segue into any group or organization. Things like paying attention to each other. We have no script, so whatever somebody else says or does, that is
your
script.
You better not be daydreaming up there, right?
Right. Number two is agreement. I talked about that, where you have your ideas about what you want to have happen, but other people bring their ideas into a story, and you have to make sure that they all work together. So rather than rejecting one idea for another, you take both of the ideas and you find a marriage of them. And that is a really useful tool in so many organizations. Beyond that, making sure that we're looking out for the team. It's never a star vehicle. It's about the ensemble, making sure that we're committing to what we're doing. You know, you hate to see somebody start a character, and then 30 seconds later, the accent's gone or the posture changed. It's like you used to be 50,
like,
and now this character's 12.
Where'd he go?
Right. So you commit to those things. And, you know, finally, we just have fun with it. Life is very serious most of the time. And just have fun. Enjoy it. If we're enjoying it, the audience will enjoy it.
Sure.
And if we're not, and, you know, even though it's work, it's enjoyable work. But if we're not enjoying it, the audience can sense that, too. So we need to enjoy what we do.
Scariest moment on stage, Michael, ever?
Oh, goodness.
One of the scariest.
One of the scariest moments on stage would probably be, we're getting ready to do a Shakespeare scene, and my team captain just looked at me and said, "Start the scene with a soliloquy."
Whoa.
I did it. But the first thought was, okay, I'm going to improvise a Shakespearean soliloquy. Here we go. Rhyming couplet and all.
Oh, my goodness.
About cheese.
Yes. Improvising in iambic pentameter is a little bit of a daunting task.
I can't even imagine. Ed, scariest moment on stage?
Oh, after 20 years. Good heavens.
That's many thousands of choices.
I know. And, you know, there are lots of moments where, like Michael, you're kind of thrown into something like, I don't know that I would have chosen this. But, of course, in improv, you don't always get that choice.
Sure.
But for me, in retrospect, those aren't the scary moments for me. Those are the exciting moments that made me go outside of my comfort zone. Like a night, I was doing a character advice game. And we got suggestions from the audience for the characters, and somebody threw out for me auctioneer. So I'm thinking, okay, so I have to be rattling off at the mouth continually, you know, and giving that auctioneer style sound.
Yeah, that patter.
Right. And that wouldn't have been my choice, but by the time I was done with it, I was so glad that choice was made. So those aren't the scary ones for me. For me, I think the scary ones are the unexpected, like, oh, I've fallen down the steps. I actually twisted my ankle in the middle of a match.
Yikes.
Yeah, and there's like any theater, then it's a matter of, okay, how do I continue with this, assuming it's not bad enough that I need to actually seek immediate help.
Sure.
But how do I continue with it without making the audience feel like there's a problem?
Feel awkward, yeah.
And yet without making the matter worse for myself by being on it too much or doing too much physical exertion. So those moments are where you very quickly, it's like to your team, it's like, okay, I just twisted an ankle. Don't make me do anything too physical. You know, and you just tell them, but you keep a smile on your face like any good actor should, and you soldier through.
Wow. Do you ever have trouble saying goodbye to characters that you've just created?
Sometimes, especially early on. For me, having been doing this 20 years anymore, my brain kind of does a brain dump at the end of a performance, because you only need the information for as long as you're performing. So by the time I'm done, it's just kind of gone because I didn't need it any longer. So I'll remember things if they really, really made a big impression, or I remember things from the early years because at that point, with fewer improv experiences, they made bigger impressions. So the characters, unfortunately, yeah, they'll be there for a moment, but by the time I'm done with the performance, they're gone from my mind. So as much as I might like to bring them back, I have to kind of recreate from scratch every time. If that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. That one moment they're here, the next moment they're gone. Like real life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Sharon Gamble with Ed Trout and Michael Davis of Comedy Sports Indianapolis, celebrating 2 decades in the Circle City. You can learn more at IndyComedySports.com. That's IndyIndy. Comedy Sports, and that's a Z at the end, SPORTZ. IndyComedySports.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Intimate, elegant, swanky, sophisticated. However you describe it, the music is what matters at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Cabaret's director, Shannon Forsell, about some of their upcoming shows this spring.
Shannon, welcome back. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
You are very welcome. And congratulations on going into the 4th season of Cabaret at the Columbia Club. What a great home for you guys.
Yes, we have really found a great place and a great partnership, and it's just going swimmingly. So we're really thrilled.
Swanky digs you have down there.
Yes, but approachable. Swanky, but approachable.
Swanky, but
like
approachable.
Yes.
So what have you guys got lined up? I know we're already a little bit into the season. Leslie Odom Jr. from Smash was performing there back in February, but there's a lot of good stuff coming up, including the first one we're going to talk about, Meow Meow?
Yes.
What is this? This is a who?
Yeah, Meow Meow is, we say, Australia's naughty kitty, purr delight, baby. She is actually, like I said, she's Australian, and she is really interesting. They call her type of cabaret kamikaze cabaret.
Okay.
She's very fun. She's a little more edgy than what folks have seen from us.
A little bit
past.
More burlesque.
She comes from the neo.
Or am I just being hopeful here?
Well, exactly. She comes from the neo burlesque movement, but she and she's bustier clad.
Okay.
But she doesn't take more than that off. But she's definitely saucy and sassy. She's also an award-winning cabaret performer. She performs all over Europe to sold-out crowds, Sydney Opera House.
Wow.
She's going to be at the Lincoln Center the week after she is here. And what's funny about her is they describe her as a cross between Edith Piaf and Phyllis Diller. So I, you
okay.
can only, and so, but folks can check out on our website, thecabaret.org, for, because all of these folks are so new to the Indianapolis mindset, so to speak. We have video footage of all of our folks and audio, so you can kind of get a feeling for what their show is like. Her show is very audience participatory.
That sounds
very fun.
Well, and this sounds like just a perfect new direction to sort of push the definition of what cabaret is and how you are defining cabaret here in Indianapolis.
Yes, she's definitely more European cabaret. We have five European artists this year. We're really thrilled about that. So some of the stuff we do is more New York style, has a little more jazz influence, Great American Songbook influence. She is European, so it's a little more body, a little burlesque-y, and also still has some great comment, you know, kind of biting commentary in it as well. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very fun. And then after that, we move into the Scott Allen Songbook. So speaking of sort of Great American Songbook, and this is in April.
Yes. You know, this is part of an LDI cultural grant that we received. And
which let me just stop you there for a second.
Yeah.
This is a pretty big deal.
It is a big
last
deal.
Year, in celebration of Lacey Diversified Industries, the LDI company gave out a number of grants to different arts organizations, sort of as part of their 100-year celebration. Of course, Margot Lacey Eccles, who was a great supporter of the cabaret, as well as organizations I've been involved with, like Andy Reid's, really sort of drove this through LDI and the Lacey Foundation. And you've been able to really take advantage of this grant with some new performances you've been able to bring in.
Yes, it's made a wonderful difference for us. What this allowed us to do is to do a new series called Cabaret the New Generation. The gifts were designed to help arts organizations build new audiences, so to get new audiences and make bridges to the audiences that they kind of already have. So what we did is we created a series called The New Generation, which are all artists that are under the age of 40.
Okay.
So and that would appeal to those under the age of 40, as well as those of us that are young at heart. And so Scott Allen, there's two shows that they kind of go together here. So we had a four-show series, and then we're going to have a local show as well.
Okay.
So Scott Allen is a fantastic contemporary composer that does a lot of contemporary musical theater type music. So he's sort of the next generation of our Great American Songbook,
so to speak.
And he's going to be bringing with him Casey Levi, who is a Broadway singer. So he's going to sing some of his music, and she's going to sing some of his music. But his music has been sung by Sutton Foster, Jonathan Groff, Stephanie Block, Liz Calloway, and more. So all the greats sing his music. And so it's a lot of young folks really know his work. It's really great work. And then he's going to do a master class when he's here on that Saturday.
That's cool, because that's really become a part, too, of what you've been doing, not just the performances, but having the educational outreach and masterclasses with local singers.
Right. And folks that are really interested in becoming performers should check those out. On the Saturday that a lot of our performers are here, they will do a two-hour masterclass. It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance to work one-on-one with a Broadway star or someone just extremely accomplished in their field. And so he is a writer, but he obviously chooses music for Broadway stars. So you're really getting in front of some really fantastic folks. And then the very next night, all of the master classes that we've done, we're handpicking the folks that really show amazing promise. And then we're going to have a local spotlight of some of those fantastic
One night talent. Only, Cabaret the only. New Generation. What a great idea.
Yeah. So all those folks that are, we hope, the next generation of folks that are going to be stars are going to be on the stage that night on April 19th.
So are there a lot of, local singers, local musicians, entertainers who are pursuing cabaret or that's a passion for them? Are you seeing?
I think that they're maybe more in the musical theater realm because cabaret is not well known, and we've only been around 4 years to educate about cabaret. But I think that, so, you know, that's part of what we're doing is trying to show what cabaret is and what separates cabaret from musical theater, too. So it really is, and it's really less of a genre than more of a style of performance.
Almost an attitude.
Yes, it is. Right. So any genre kind of can fit in cabaret, but and it's the intimacy of it and the vulnerability of it, like someone singing in your living mm-hmm. room. And it really takes performers into a new challenge to have to take their, you know, work from a big stage where they're sort of anonymous from the audience mm-hmm. and have the fourth wall between them, to them being kind of almost a part of the audience where it's a conversation between the two of us.
It is very intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's part of what we're
doing.
I
mean, not like audience participation with a magician intimate. But
right.
It's, you know, but it is still, I mean, fairly, you know, they see you, you see them. I mean, it's
right.
You know, physically very close. The lights may be dim, but they're not, you know, it's mm-hmm. not totally blacked out or anything like that.
Right.
You know, you're sitting there with a drink in hand. You see the people around you.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it is an intimate experience. And there are times they'll talk to you and you can mm-hmm. talk back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is sort of like, you know, a performer in your living room kind
yeah.
of thing. So, yeah, so we want to introduce young folks to that, too. And there are some amazingly talented young folks. And there's not a lot of opportunity out there. Even when you go to music school, they're teaching a lot of classical.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of folks are really teaching musical theater and, you know, stage, other kind of stage skills to get you a wide variety of jobs.
Okay.
And the skills that we teach in the classes can translate to any kind of genre of
sure,
music.
Sure.
So I would highly recommend it.
Very cool. Hey, tell me about some of the other performances coming up later this spring. You've got one called Paris Combo, an mm-hmm. evening in Paris, which to me that sounds cabaret, but then it's actually more sort of a gypsy jazz group. So,
yeah.
So what, I mean, is this more like Django Reinhardt stuff or
it's
what?
It's a little bit of all that. They're really hard to put in any kind of box. They are... Each one of them is from a different country, so they're almost like world music meets cabaret.
Okay.
They do sing. They do a lot of the songwriting, and so they sing some of it in French and explain some of it in English. And they're actually very hip, a very hip group, a very interesting group. So it's a little bit of gypsy jazz, a little bit of cabaret, and it's just got some fantastic commentary in their lyric work. So I think they're almost sold out, actually, already.
Oh, wow.
Because
that's great.
They're really well known to and really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is one night only, April 23rd. And then we get into May, Emily Skinner, Broadway Her Way.
Right. Emily Skinner's doing a one-night a one-woman show. Emily Skinner, for those of us of a certain generation, knew her when she starred in the Broadway Tony Award-winning, I think it's just nominated, Tony Award. Was nominated for a Tony Award Sideshow.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the
okay.
two conjoined twins, the crazy show that should have never made yeah. it and did. And she's fantastic. Then she's gone on to be in numerous shows, Jekyll and Hyde, The Full Monty. She was just recently starred in Billy Elliot.
Okay.
So she's been in a ton of Broadway shows. She's super fantastic. And so she's going to be doing Broadway Her Way. So Broadway with
that's
a twist.
So a lot of fun Broadway songs, but
yeah.
Again, very intimate. And then Germany's Searing Siren in May.
Yes. Uta Lemper.
Uta Lemper
is coming in May.
How do you find these performers? I mean, obviously they're known around the world,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, when you call up Uta Lemper and you say, you want to come to a cabaret in Indianapolis, and she says, you know, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, first of all, I never get to call up Uta Lemper herself.
Okay.
I call up Uta's agent and we talk. But what's interesting with some of these European folks, too, you try to see when they're coming to America.
Yeah.
Because they're not often in America.
Mm-hmm.
So then you try to see, oh, would they come and see us while they're in America?
Sure.
So
okay.
You got to start to get used to mm-hmm. checking people out. But she is really the German cabaret icon. German cabaret style is her style of music. It's a little bit darker, a little bit edgier. You know, the movie Cabaret
mm-hmm.
is German cabaret.
Sure.
So that's some some dark stuff. But she is, and her show's called The Last Tango in Berlin. But whatever, she performs all over the world. So, but she's also done musicals and things. You know, she was Velma Kelly in Chicago. You know, so really great at is storytelling through song. But she's going to be taking us on a journey through Berlin with Brecht and Kurt Weill, to the poetic universe of French chansons with Brel Piaf, and then Argentinian world of tango. So more the sexy kind of passionate stuff out there, stories of love, loss, survival, and passion.
Wow, what a great spring season you have lined
up.
Yeah,
we really feel like what we're trying to do is show all the different types of
performances
cabaret
that will melt the snow.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Very cool. So, and again, you have a beautiful program catalog that's available. People can pick up, you know, if they go down to the Columbia Club or pick up at other places. But also they can look at the whole schedule at thecabaret.org for your website as well. Again, all the performances do take place at the Columbia Club, but it is completely open to the public.
Right. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it is. It's open to the public, which is confusing for folks. And folks can have what other people may not know is it's sort of a cross between a theatrical experience and a nightclub feeling, mm-hmm. because there are tables and chairs. You can have drinks, cocktails.
If you want to do dinner, you could, you could just have drinks.
Yeah, you don't have to have dinner. Mm-hmm. You can have dinner. You can have appetizers, desserts. So you are able to be social with your friends. Mm-hmm. You're not kind of in a row where you'd have to yell down to each other.
Right.
So folks really kind of like that style.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the room, the crystal that it's in, which is the Crystal Terrace, is gorgeous. The backdrop of all our shows is a plate glass window that overlooks Monument Circle.
Yeah, it's just stunning. Just a stunning
room.
It's
a swanky room.
It is a swanky room.
Yeah.
Well, always great to hear about what is going on at the Cabaret, and what a great lineup you have coming up for us. Thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter, Shannon.
Thanks so much for getting the word out there about what's going on in the arts.
Travis DiNicola with the Cabaret at the Columbia Club's Shannon Forsell. You can get the complete schedule of their cabaret performances at, you'll love this URL, thecabaret.org, thecabaret.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Have you eaten any pie this week?
Pie?
National Pie Day is Thursday, March 14th. If you're hearing us
you
Thursday
like
night.
You mean like pecan or
any
key lime?
Any kind of pie, actually. I think it's because of that whole math thing over there.
Oh, you mean like 3.14 March
14th
on pie. It's Pie Day.
That's
great.
Pie Day. So if you're hearing us on Thursday night and you haven't had any pie yet, awesome. Have some pie if you're hearing us on Saturday morning. It's not too late. We won't tell if you eat pie now.
Not at all.
And it'll give you the energy to do some events that we're going to include on.
What do we do?
I've
got a slice of something here.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. This weekend, in fact, you can go see that wonderful classic film Hoosiers, and they are showing it at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, which is pretty cool.
Smart.
On that ridiculously large scoreboard, which is even cooler, and it's on March 17th, Sunday, St. Patty's Day, as part of a fundraiser, and this is through Heartland Truly Moving Pictures, and some of the filmmakers and cast members, as well as the 54 Milan players are going to be there, and it's all part of a fundraiser for Heartland. How cool to see the movie in a basketball court. That is this Sunday at 2 p.m.
I have something that involves someone who designs for the upper crust of Indianapolis and others. Chip Colleen, ASID, owner of the Indianapolis-based Colleen & Company, will lend his design talent to give guests at the 3rd Annual Indiana Artisan Marketplace a new experience, room setting, showcasing, furnishings, and decor by Indiana's highest quality artists. He's going to design a dining room and a bathroom, and you can see them at the Marketplace, the state's premier art and food experience, April 6th and 7th at the State Fairgrounds. Don't miss this. it is a fabulous opportunity to check out our local artisans, our state artisans as well.
I'm going to slice of that. Uh-huh. Okay. just a couple more days, actually, to submit your nomination for the Eugenia Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award. This is a great program, and each year they recognize terrific Indiana authors, new authors, recognized authors, national authors, but you only have until March 22nd to get your submissions in. So what do? Well, you go to the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. You can go through the library's website or indieplfoundation.org and make your submission for the Indiana Authors Award now.
I don't think there are any crumbs involved. I don't know glass blowing technology terms that well, but Indiana Glass Arts Alliance and Great Glass Design Studio, that's GRT Glass Design Studio, will host a free annual hot glass infusion weekend, Saturday, March 23rd and Sunday, March 24th. It takes place at GRT Glass Design Studio, 6400 Brookville Road. More information at grtglassdesign.com. And if you are glass curious, you want to check it out. It's family friendly, and you can watch people doing lamp work, glass blowing, and, as they say, much, much more. Again, that's coming up next weekend.
Hey, one of my favorite events of the year is when the high school musicians perform with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra in their free side-by-side concert, and that is coming up on March 20th, this Wednesday. That's right, it's a free concert, and 53 of Indiana's finest high school artists are going to be performing. ISO musicians playing all types of great stuff, including Tchaikovsky and Mussorgsky, lots of other fun stuff, and that is at 7:30 at the Hilbert Circle Theater. It is free, but you do need to get tickets ahead of time. A very cool concert.
Speaking of cool concerts, one more. Pike Performing Arts Center hosts Philharmonic Orchestra of Indianapolis this Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, at 3 p.m. on the program, music of Mozart, Dvorak, Paul Dukas, and much, much more. Info at philharmonicindy.org.
And we'll be back next week with more on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Judaism, Christianity, and Buddhism come together in a new exhibit, an art exhibit, at the JCC. The artists are Susie Friedman, who is Jewish, Johanna Junker, who is Christian, and Melissa Parrott Quimby, who is Buddhist. Sharon Gamble invited Susie and Melissa into our studios, along with Lev Rothenberg, the JCC's Director of Arts and Education, and Rusty Moe, a therapist, educator, and writer, who will lead a panel discussion with the artists on Tuesday, March 19th at 7 p.m.
So it strikes me that this show is kind of like the artistic interpretation of progressive revelation. Progressive wow. revelation, you know, where this is one of my favorite concepts in philosophy and spirituality, that God expresses him or herself as he or she needs to be understood to his or her subjects at the right time, at the right place. And that's why faiths are different.
Mm. Hence the term revelation.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, I am totally interpreting your your exhibit, Lev. Am I even in the ballpark for what you were thinking?
I don't think I'm as deep a thinker as
stop.
My belief is that probably all the great art has a spiritual background. And so, you know, we just felt at the JCC we try to bring people together. And so we just felt it made sense to reach out. That's about as deep as we went on that.
And the rest is up to the rest of us, right?
The
three faiths are, and I'm turning to you, Rusty, mm-hmm. our moderator for a discussion, mm-hmm. but the three faith traditions represented are?
Judaism, represented, is that too strong of a word?
Reflected, maybe.
Very nice. Reflected by Susie Friedman. Buddhism, reflected. By Melissa Quimby Parrott. Did I do that right?
Parrott Quimby.
You know, I've done every time I've emailed you, I've had to flip those two. And Johanna Junker, who is not here today, but she is Christian and from Sao Paulo, Brazil, which is why she isn't here today.
So. That's a reasonable reason, absolutely. Lev, let me ask you, were there, beyond maybe revealing what these three traditions have to tell us, what kind of parameters did you put around the art? Were there dimensions? Were there numbers of pieces? Or did you just say to these three artists, this is the theme of the show, go?
We didn't put any specific parameters. We're looking pretty much at what we call one-dimensional art, art that can hang on a wall. Beyond that, you know, given the fact that we have three artists, none of them are going to be able to put a huge number of pieces of artwork. But beyond that, we want them to do it on their own. And we think that all three artists represent different types of art, which is just wonderful. And it's going to fit together very well.
Cool. And I'd like to start, Susie, you specialize in a particular kind of piece that I want you to describe. These are our marriage documents.
Yes, I make ketubas, ketubot, which are marriage documents, marriage certificates, but they're illuminated documents. So I've got many designs. I've designed many with all different Judaic symbols and nature, things from nature, and lots of different ideas. I did one that it actually portrays, you know, America to Jerusalem. So it has, you know, actually I call it New York, but it has it has Ellis Island, which is, you know, something that, you know, a lot of Jews came to the United States from Ellis Island, and we have, you know, Jerusalem, the old city, in that particular one. But I really enjoy doing them.
So forgive my ignorance on this subject, but are there words that are incorporated in each
of
these documents?
Yes, and then each of these documents has a text, and there are several texts. There are the Orthodox text, the Conservative text, and the Reform text, and there are English translations, and some people like just the Hebrew, and some people like a combination of the Hebrew and English.
And when you're doing these not as art, not as standalone pieces, but when you're actually working with a couple, is there a little bit of give and take? Do they say, oh, please somehow incorporate our dog that we love, or somehow incorporate
and
our...
You would not believe some of the things they wanted.
That's kind of a crazy idea, but...
Yes, no, there's been some very personal things that they've wanted. One couple met while jogging in Central Park, and I actually painted them and put them in in the ketubah. I've done lots of personal things like that. So
that's wonderful. Do people do this in renewing their vows as well?
I also do anniversary ketubot. And some people, it's funny because other faiths have called me and wanted me to design something for them because they just like the tradition of having this document.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's beautiful. What a lovely transcendence of a particular culture. Melissa, you do botanically inspired, just talking about Central Park. So talk to me about your inspiration and its connection to your faith heritage.
Well, my work is inspired by nature, and I am interested in all kinds of color, texture, shape, form, I guess whatever I respond to in the moment. So I work very intuitively in response to my environment. And my faith reflects my artwork just through my daily practice of what I do as being a Buddhist.
Is there a sense in which I get the sense that there's kind of a very close study, almost a microscopic appeal in the way you do your art? Is there a connection between that and the mindfulness?
Yes, I think so, that the microscopic elements within nature or particular patterns definitely intrigue my interest. And so that is something I would respond to in my material.
Is there a shape in nature that's your absolute favorite that you find yourself coming back to?
Lately, I have been experimenting with just the quality of moving the hand across the surface and the line. So something very linear and also, I guess, has curves within it as well.
Do you work directly in nature, or do you stop and photograph something that you want to capture back in your studio?
More about responding to images that are collected and just more of an abstract interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing quite so literal.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. And Rusty, no pressure or anything,
okay.
But you are going to be leading a panel discussion with these two wonderful artists, as well as Johanna, who's not able to be with us today. So where do you start? How do you prepare for this conversation?
I start as an idiot. I'll say that. I'll repeat that several times. I don't know anything about art, but I'm fascinated by the fact that someone can create something out of inspiration, something that wasn't is. I'm fascinated by the creative process, by the trust that artists have to have in their own talent. And then in their own, talent meaning skill, and yet also, like Melissa said, in something intuitive that shapes something visible. I think we're very courageous this morning talking about something as visual as art on a radio program, and something as invisible also as faith. And we're trying to describe it, to shape it in words, shape it over the air. Maybe it'll connect with somebody somehow who's listening. So, yeah, I start with idiocy and proceed with curiosity.
Now, some of our listeners will remember that you're also a poet and writer. So for you to say, I don't know anything about art.
It's very, very true. I mean, these forms of art. When I was at Susie's house, she was showing me some, I don't even know the terms, figurative nudes. She was showing me some nudes. And I said there was something so that she had my sense of her work, just to encapsulate it for myself, was that she had sensual reverence. So that's how I would describe, that's how I would use words to describe her sudden connection when I saw her, those figures, as a sensual reverence. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I think we have a title for an exhibit.
I like that.
So my function really is to be an aesthetic lubricant.
That's wonderful. Okay. What a great way to frame that. Lev has learned something new already this morning.
You know what you're doing? This is what we're doing.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. The thing I find so interesting in talking in particular with visual artists through the years, this radio program's been on for 13 years, and in just the span of 10, 12, 13 years, the world through digital means has become so much more visual than it used to be. It used to be people lived in words much more than they lived in pictures. You would go out your front door, pick up your newspaper, and yes, there'd be photos in the newspaper, but it was mostly about the words. You'd go to work and you'd call someone, but now you have the option of emailing them a video, you know? We're living more with pictures, and I wonder if that is influencing you. Susie, do you feel any pressure or any change in the world? Are people more sophisticated in looking at your work?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. A lot of things that are coming out now are computer generated too, and I have a problem with that because I, you know, I like the idea of really working with what I see and what I feel, and I think it's more pure coming directly.
Directly from your body.
Yes.
Okay.
Without a mouse in hand, maybe.
Yeah. And I like
digital mouse in hand.
Yeah.
I was just curious about that pause. I was just curious for Susie, what makes you uncomfortable about digital art?
You know, I think when it first started being really prevalent, I started looking at it and I started seeing things that I would change. I looked at designs, and I thought, it's just so predictable, I think, without little nuances of, you know, that human touch. For me.
Exactly.
And I'm sure it works well for other people,
yes,
but for me, I don't like, you know, it's something that I can't see myself ever doing.
It can be, without drawing spiritual fire here, it can be perfect if a machine generates it, or pretty close to it.
And I think I like the imperfections.
And it takes away from the experience of actually the activity of responding to your material.
That's
so
really
you don't have
point.
That same energy in that visual image or object.
Do you feel the same way about
computing? I personally need to have, to be able to feel, I'm a texture person, so I like the quality of material and the tactileness of it. So the digital aspect has an importance for certain things, but for me, being a sculptor, having the material in hand is really vital.
And when we were talking at your studio the other day, when I asked you what your favorite texture was, you said softness.
Mm.
And that is such an evocative word. What do you mean by soft?
So it makes you feel kind of good and, I don't know, just like at home.
What's your favorite texture right now? Or to touch.
To touch?
Yeah.
Velour. I don't know. Something.
That's so 70s.
Like soft and cozy.
Chenille. Yes. Okay.
Sharon Gamble, with two of the three artists who are represented in the JCC's Three Faith Traditions exhibition, open through April 26th. That's Susie Friedman, who is Jewish, and Melissa Parrott Quimby, who is Buddhist. Johanna Junker, who is a Christian, was in South America and unable to be part of this conversation. We also heard from Lev Rothenberg, the JCC's Director of Arts and Education, and Rusty Moe, a therapist, educator, and writer, who will lead a panel discussion with the artists on Tuesday, March 19th at 7 p.m. You can learn lots more at jccindy.org. Again, jccindy.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll talk with Ophelia Wellington about Freetown Village's interpretation of the Madam Walker story.
I'll talk with Jumble cartoonist Jeff Kinnarick about his drawings and his music.
And I'll get a preview of the guitar exhibit at the Idol Jar, so get your air guitar chops ready.
Nice.
And we'll have our arts calendar we call
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.